Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, joined by Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart. We'll be discussing a number of topics on this holiday weekend. The Union Club Hotel at Purdue is a Travel and Leisure World's Best Hotel in Indiana nominee and also a sponsor of the show. Voting is now open, so visit the PurdueUnionClub.com for more details and to show your Purdue pride. And a reminder too, you can always subscribe or become a member of goldenblack.com. We have free trials available. There are links on our site at goldenblack.com. Now, even though it's we're in the off season, so to speak, lots of news going on with respect to recruiting, with respect to the transfer portal, which is going to be a topic today. There's always information going on, and Brian and Tom do a great job with that, if I do say so myself. So, Brian, I'm going to start with you on the whole notion of this transfer portal. You wrote about it this week in your weekly word about the new world of recruiting and the new how classes are going to get put together. You know, Purdue's already had what, a half dozen transfers in. They've had X number that have left. We didn't anticipate this 10 years ago. Now it's the new reality.
Yeah, it's not just the transfer portal, but it's more so the immediate eligibility, where
right.
Recruits or players don't have to sit out a year anymore when they transfer, which would be one of the biggest deterrents for them to transfer, because that's obviously not optimal for a lot of them. But I think this will go down many years from now as one of the singular most important, impactful changes that college sports has ever seen. And to be honest with you, I think you saw Roy Williams retire yesterday, probably before Roy Williams ordinarily would have retired, because the game is about to change profoundly because of this. It's going to be a much more transactional kind of environment, where you're going to see everyone's going to lose transfers every year, I think. And the teams that have the most success with this are the teams that are going to be able to piece together teams, you know, every spring, as opposed to, you know, building teams over 4 and 5 years. Football recruiting is going to be exponentially different, because this is now going to be a year-to-year NFL style roster management kind of deal, as opposed to, again, what I just mentioned before, the signing 25 kids, redshirting 22 of them, and then hoping that the majority of them are good players by the time they're juniors or seniors. That's just not going to be the model anymore. This is going to be a year-to-year deal, both in basketball and football, and the most adaptable coaches are going to be the ones with advantages. It's going to be really interesting to see. You know, Matt Painter is kind of like, he's, in terms of chronological age, he's still a young coach technically, but he's also an old enough soul, and he's been around long enough where he's kind of like got a foot in both worlds, where he's kind of that Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim, you know, Jay Wright sort of class of coaches, but also he's still of that kind of next group coming up kind of strata too. So it'll be really interesting to see how he adapts to this new climate coming, because he has historically obviously been a program builder, a team builder, a, you know, guy who has developed players, who has tried to let teams grow together. And I just don't know if that's a luxury these coaches are going to have as much of anymore. It's going to add another layer to his process, trying to recruit things on the front end, trying to make sure the fit is absolutely ideal on the front end, so that maybe Purdue can be a little bit insulated from the chaos that's about to ensue. I think that Purdue has lost two guys this spring they would have lost under any circumstances, because I think they're just two guys who want to play and probably weren't going to play a whole lot had they stayed. But, you know, this is going to be a really, really profound change to college sports. It's going to change everything for the coaches, for the players, for the fans who, you know, follow recruiting, who get attached to players, and then all of a sudden one day they wake up and that player's gone, when they might have just bought his jersey a week before or gotten his autograph or something like that. It's going to usher in a brand new era of impropriety, because, you know, now you're going to have a golden era for tampering. It's just, I could talk, you know, for an hour about all the changes that are going to come from this. But as to not ruin the show, I will cut it off right there. But it's going to be one of the singular most impactful changes NCAA sports has ever seen.
You know, Tom, Jeff Brohm doesn't, and you and myself, I'll speak, don't have much hair to pull out. But, you know, it's got to impact guys like that. You know, Purdue's had guys leave. You know, it doesn't sound like these are guys that were, at least at this point in time, that not that Purdue didn't want, but the guys that, that may not be impact players. But it's just going to be an interesting deal. And here we sit on April the 3rd, and, you know, you don't really know for sure what your roster is going to look like. And Purdue's got some guys that could still join as we build that roster for the 2021 season.
Al, I happen to like your hairdo.
Yeah.
My hairdo. Low maintenance. Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Wake up and just towel off and you're out the door.
Yep,
taking
that's
care of this business. So, yeah. I'm excited about the transfer portal era. I guess I'm not a doom and gloom guy who thinks the sky is going to fall anytime something changes. Change is good. This will all figure out. College athletics will thrive. I think what's going on with the Supreme Court right now, with that continuing battle with compensation and whatnot, is the real theater. See where that goes and how that continues to evolve. And of course, the NIL stuff is still looming out there as well. States continue to pass their own legislation. The NCAA, obviously not being proactive in any of this stuff, is having decisions made forward, it looks like, potentially. So there's a lot of interesting plot lines to continue to follow, you know, on that standpoint. So, but back to your question about the portal. Yeah, I tell you what. Purdue has had some attrition in the portal. But again, the players that Purdue has seen depart, you know, I don't think probably had a chance to play significant roles for Purdue. Probably they were best served to maybe look for opportunities elsewhere. And I think both parties probably felt it was beneficial in most of these instances for Purdue. So, and again, the players they brought in, guys, the chance, the ability to maybe flip your roster, bring in some key players, boy, you can really do a lot in just one season. I'll be interested to see maybe how the portal impacts the recruitment of junior college players. You know, you always hear about the headache some of those guys have. I mean, why even go to the junior college ranks if you have to, if you can maybe dip into the portal, get a guy whose character and grades and whatnot may be a cut above, maybe the JC guy, not the stereotype JC guys. But again, it's going to be fun to watch that JC recruiting moving forward and how it evolves or devolves, I should say. So yeah, Purdue's brought in some nice players here, addressed some needs. And as Brian has mentioned, you know, in some of his discussions and some of his posts, you know, they continue to shop. So some of the players we're looking at are very intriguing. So, you know, you gotta change or adapt or change or perish, I think was the phrase I always heard, change or perish. And if you don't change, you're going to perish in any industry. And these college coaches, as Brian noted, are going to be really put to that test here.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting storyline. And yet basketball, Brian, can do more damage or recreate. And I'm using Purdue women's basketball as an example. They've had some attrition. And we're not, and again, a sport we don't cover on a day-to-day basis, but we certainly are aware. And yet, you know, you come in, you could build a roster quickly. You can turn basketball programs maybe faster than football just by the 11 versus 5 calculation. I mean, all those factors play going to make this really interesting, but maybe really frustrating.
It can go a lot of different ways. It can absolutely change the paradigm on new coaches because it's not like the rebuild is all that much of a thing anymore. I mean, to use Micah Shrewsbury as an example, he takes over at Penn State. He could go recruit 6 transfers this spring if he has to. And if they're good enough and Penn State can win right away, then your rebuild is done. If they're not good enough, then you're still stuck in the mud a little bit. But that's kind of good. I'm just using that as an example because he's a first-year coach with a bunch of scholarships available.
Right.
But that's kind of the nature of it is that, you know, when a new coach comes in, you know, he might not be guaranteed the same 5-year honeymoon that, you know, he was before. That's not to say any new coach should be on the hot seat after a year or two, but it just kind of changes the way it changes the calculus in terms of when a program can be expected to get you know, the coach's quote unquote guys in. There's just any number of ways this is going to profoundly impact college sports. But, you know, I think a big part of this now too, is that, you know, the stigma of players transferring kind of went out the window a few years ago, a while back. I think now it's just part of it. I think it's not even going to be a thing anymore when a guy leaves. It's because it's just going to be the general expectation. This is going to be a much more mutual deal where the control is no longer centralized in half of the equation, whereas the coaches used to have total roster control. And there was that deterrent that would bar a lot of guys from leaving when they might want to leave. This is now a much more even-keeled kind of deal, and coaches are going to have to manage their personalities in a way where they don't, you know, have everyone leaving every year. I think everyone's going to lose guys every year, but this is going to change the way coaches coach their teams. It is going to change the way student athletes perceive their places in the world at all times. I think, as we mentioned before, everybody who left basketball, Aaron Wheeler, Emmanuel Duona, everybody who's left football thus far for Purdue, those are guys who want to play and will be putting themselves in a better position to play wherever they go. And I think it's time to start looking at that as healthy. I think that's good. That's what everybody wants. And that's the good that can come out of this. And I think we have to get out of the mindset that when a guy leaves, that means somebody failed, or that's a bad thing, or that's an indictment of Purdue's program or whoever's program. You know, last year it was kind of a thing when Nojel Eastern and Matt Harms left Purdue, just because it was a little bit of an eye opener when two older guys just up and leave. I think Matt Painter was probably more upset at the reaction to that news than he was at the actual news in some ways, because people were viewing that as an indictment of his program. What's wrong with Purdue kind of stuff. And it certainly didn't help when both parties were making comments that essentially blamed Purdue for their problems. But I think now you look at stuff like that now as just an athlete being in more control of his career, looking for something better. And that's kind of everybody's right. And I think it's going to be something that should be perceived much more as healthy as opposed to the opposite of that.
Yeah, speaking in vaccination terms, and obviously, and I don't mean to be flippant, and I know that's a process, but it's almost like, and I'll throw it out to both of you before we switch topics, but once you get a guy that has transferred once, he or she is not going anyplace else. So they're almost, I'm using the analogy there, that they come in and they're cured, they're vaccinated, they're not moving. I mean, does that change the dynamic at all to guys that you do get, or guys that once they've transferred once, all of a sudden you can have a little bit more stability? Or is that just an illogical thought? Tom, I'll start with you.
Well, I'm sorry.
I guess I was kind of confused by the question. You think if they get vaccinated?
Well, I'm just saying, if you get a guy that transfers and they've already transferred once, then all of a sudden you've got, and you get 6-7 football players a year, all of a sudden you'll at least have a pool of 14, 21 guys on your roster that won't transfer again, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I just saw, there's a guy named Mark Smith who was from Edwardsville, Illinois, went to Illinois and transferred to Missouri.
Yeah,
I transferred to Kansas State. So
there's a bunch of guys like that.
Yeah, you guys. I don't think it's going to stop anybody, fellas. You know, free will, and you know what? I'm all for the student athlete. I mean, I could do whatever I wanted as a student. I could have transferred 4 times if I wanted. Right? It was my decision. And yeah, people are going to make mistakes maybe in life. That's part of growing up, and that's part of the maturing process. That's part of college. If guys want to transfer, let them transfer. And again, like Brian said, we've seen guys already jump in schools multiple times. So just because you transferred once, Alan, I don't think that's going to necessarily give you cold feet to want to do it again. Is it right? Again, it's everybody's individual decision to talk to their parents, talk to their coaches and whatnot. But again, it's not something I think would probably be really advantageous. Yeah. I guess as you get older, your perspective changes. You have experience. It seems like a lot of times, sometimes you're better off just sitting tight
A lot of times things fall in your lap if you just put your head down and work hard right where you're at, instead of always being anxious and being concerned with your ego and yourself. So again, it's easy to say as a 50-year-old, not so easy when you're 20. And again, it's just a new world. And yeah, it's different. And when things are different, it's uncomfortable. Change is uncomfortable. People typically fight it. And that's a lot of what we're seeing right now, because there's a great unknown. And again, there's discomfort in the unknown. But again, it's and in another way, I think it's like I said earlier, I think it's kind of an exciting era too. I don't know what Brian thinks.
Yeah, Brian, I guess my point is that I know I'm going one level down the road here, but if they do a transfer a second time, they would have to sit out. Or is that?
Well, I don't know if they're going to leave in place any sort of waiver process like they've had before. I don't know if the graduate transfer stuff is going out the window. So I don't know if we know that yet. But the gist of all of this is that you get one transfer without sitting out a year. Now, if you transfer a second time, can you do that and sit out a year? I don't know. If you do that and you've already transferred, you're obviously going to lose a year of eligibility. You'd lose a year of eligibility probably regardless.
I bet they keep grad transfers.
I don't know if that's going to remain in place. I know there have been some movement over the years to try to close that up, just because it's completely belied the intent of the rule, which is to allow for academic freedom as opposed to athletic freedom. And it's been exploited 1,000 times over. And I don't know if that alone is necessarily a reason to do away with it, but I do wonder if with this one-time allowance being in play, if that wouldn't give them the reason they need to do away with the graduate transfer loophole. That's exactly what it is, a loophole that's become mainstream. Yeah. So I don't know. I just don't know what this is going to look like in terms of a second transfer, but you would hope, and I say that knowing full well that this won't be the case, but you would hope that the majority of guys find where they want to be on that first transfer, as opposed to having to do it again or wanting to.
And the numbers suggest that's the reality. I mean, there aren't that many that do transfer twice. And again, there have been bigger penalties in play. So that's part of it as well. Just an interesting thought process. It'll be interesting to see what happens. All right. Also, go ahead.
Just to add something to this real quick. I just think this, no one is more pro student athlete than me. I mean, I can go into all sorts of different issues here that I can talk for an hour on that probably nobody wants to hear, but I just think this needs more guardrails. I just think that for a million different reasons. I think it will hurt the game. And as much as I want the student athletes to have control over their careers, I think everyone benefits from a healthy college basketball, especially college football as well, obviously, although the individualism of college football is a lot different than it is in college basketball. But I would have just liked to have seen like a waiver period to do this, where if you're going to do it, you get your year, that's fine. But here's a week in the spring where you have to do it. That way people know what their rosters are going to look like going into the summer. People have some sense of normalcy. The worst case scenario here is a situation where, like, the starting quarterback decides on August 31st, he wants to transfer, and then he's playing for somebody else a week later. Now, I don't know what guardrails are in place for that sort of thing, but think of the devastation that's going to have on certain programs who lose that quarterback, you know, things like that. Think of what kind of devastation that's going to have on the communities that have invested themselves in these programs. That being said, the athlete needs to have control over his career. That's one of the true fundamental failings of the NCAA for too long has been that they resisted the athletes having control over their careers. And that's why they're in the position they're in. But I just feel like this transfer stuff is an overcorrection that was made only because they are trying to get out in front of the payment stuff. They could have been proactive about this stuff a generation ago, and they wouldn't have been in this position. Nobody was asking for this transfer reform. They just gave it to them so that they're trying to keep kicking the can down the road on Congress, on sharing the money. So they just did this. And I don't know how much real thought they put to the potential aftermath here. So that's kind of the last parting shot I have on this topic. Again, I could talk about this all day long because it is gonna be one of the most significant things that's ever happened to college sports, for better and worse, but probably more worse than better.
Well, it doesn't mean that they won't put guardrails or be able to do some of that stuff too as this evolves. That's going to be an interesting thing too. Though you got all kinds of issues with student athlete and administration type relationships that need to be figured out. So
yeah, maybe maybe the athletes in the union. I think if the athletes had a union, they wouldn't want any guardrails.
Yeah,
I think they need a bigger voice in this.
Yeah, whatever ends up transpiring in that, it will be interesting. There's all kinds of factors with that as well, certainly. All right, well, last topic quickly.
If the players had a union, I don't know if they would have asked for this because, again, nobody – this was not a front burner issue for the athletes. I didn't hear anybody saying, hey, we need to be able to transfer without sitting out. This is something the NCAA just did to bring it into balance with, like, baseball. And it's like, if we're going to change one or the other, you know, let's.
Why would you want restrictions? Why would you want restrictions on any freedom? You want to be told where you have to work and when you can leave your job. You can only leave your job in May and June. That's it. It's insane. It's insane to put a restriction like that on anything.
Yeah.
Think about it. Does that make sense at all?
Well,
I mean, think of it in that context.
Again, everybody's making money. Everybody's getting scholarships off of this. I know they're not sharing the money, but if they shared the money instead of doing this, then they wouldn't have had to do this. Again, nobody has more respect for the need for student athletes to have control over their careers than me. But this is going to change the game for the worse profoundly. It is going to hurt interest. It's going to hurt the NCAA tournament. It's going to hurt the money that comes in and theoretically should be trickling down to student athletes. It is just a fundamental detrimental change to college football and college basketball alike. And there had to be a better way to do this. And this wasn't something that people on behalf of student athletes were asking for or demanding. It was just a red herring they threw out there to say that we are doing this for the student athletes, so get off our ass, Congress, about paying the players. And now what happens is when people get upset about all their favorite players leaving, the fans are going to blame the players. They're not going to blame the people who did this in the suits and in the office buildings. And that's one of the things I'd like to make clear right up front is when this pisses you off down the line, fans, don't forget who to blame, because this wasn't the student athletes jumping up on the table saying, we need to be able to do this. This was the NCAA doing this so they didn't have to do something else.
Yeah, and they still may end up having to do something else. All right, we got about 2 minutes left with Final Four, obviously, Big Ten out of it. This weekend, of the teams you've watched, guys, I'll start with you, Tom. Gonzaga, the team to beat. Baylor, who do you like this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, this could be the coronation, right? If you watched Gonzaga play recently, if you listen to other people, I mean, then this is a team for the ages, according to a lot of the experts, and they sure are fun to watch. We all want Baylor Gonzaga, I think. They were supposed to play earlier this year. It didn't happen because of the pandemic. This is the matchup we all wanted. How often in sports do we get the matchup we really wanted in the title event? Plus, he had the spice of an unbeaten team being involved in it. Again, a team that could be part of college basketball history if they can finish this off with two wins. So I'm excited. I like Gonzaga. And again, I would love to see them crowned as an unbeaten champion. And I certainly would not bet against them.
Yeah. Brian, what do you see when you watch a lot of this tournament? And obviously, Michigan being out, UCLA would be a – unbelievable story, but how do you view this coming down the stretch?
Well, let me gather my thoughts here real quick while I seethe over the fact that I left this damn thing in speaker view again.
I was gonna ask from the front end.
I don't see anybody beating Gonzaga. I mean, it always seems like every time everybody thinks somebody's gonna win or something's gonna happen, it doesn't. But I just don't see anybody beating Gonzaga. They have an NBA team. playing college basketball. And they have size, they have skill, they have great guards, they have everything. They're great offensively, and they're better defensively than I think everybody gives them credit for, because they're so good offensively. And I think their time has come. And somehow, some way, Gonzaga keeps getting five-star recruits to move across the country to play in the Pacific time zone against Pepperdine in Spokane, Washington. But that's another topic for a different time. But that is an NBA team playing college basketball, and I will be shocked. I mean, you know, all season long, it looked like it was Gonzaga, Baylor, and maybe Michigan as the three best teams in the country there for a while. But I think the gulf between Gonzaga and Baylor even is pretty considerable, and I just don't see anybody beating them. But
Hey, Brian, real quick. Before. I'd love your opinion on this. Do you think the nature of this season would sully Gonzaga's accomplishments?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't hear anybody talking about the college football season that way. I don't think.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I don't think so either, but I kind of wonder if people are going to hold it against them because of the weirdness of the pandemic year or not. But
yeah, I don't think so. I mean, the NCAA tournament went off without a hitch, except for VCU, of course. So it's not like – now, had Gonzaga, like, gotten some forfeits to get all the way through the NCAA tournament, you know, maybe that would have been something that would have applied. But I think Gonzaga would have been good regardless of whether or not there was a pandemic. And anybody who doesn't think that's the case hasn't watched Gonzaga play here. So I don't think so. I do wonder if, you know, history won't kind of look back informally on this season as that season, you know, especially in football, because it wasn't nearly a complete season. The fact that basketball, everybody played at least 27 regular season games, or most people played that many games. If, you know, again, if Michigan, you know, Michigan winning the Big Ten, you can say, you know, they played X number fewer games in Illinois. Maybe you apply an asterisk to that, but I don't think there's anything related to the NCAA tournament that's at play there. So I don't think it takes away from what Gonzaga is going to do at all.
I should say. Yeah. And I think there definitely will be still not an asterisk, but this will always be that season. But I tend to agree that it's hard to minimize their accomplishment, but they're already doing that. If you listen to the, some people are, I mean, again, it'll be an argument point, I think, their accomplishment will be unbelievable, and Baylor's isn't far behind if they end up winning. They obviously only lost but one or two games as well. So, all right, guys, we'll put an end to this Saturday simulcast, and thank you both for your time. I want to thank the Union Club as well. It is a Travel and Leisure World's best hotel. Make sure you go to unionclubhotel.com to vote for them as they try to win that award as well. I want to thank also or remind folks that you can become a member to goldenblack.com. We appreciate all the people that have done that already, but we got a lot still going on, and we appreciate all those many folks that have jumped on board here in the last few weeks. Our numbers continue to go up, and we appreciate that too. So have a great week, everybody. We'll be back next week, and look forward to our next Saturday simulcast.